leave it in the ground, turn the ships around. We are a people. We are a people awakening. We are a people reclaiming. We are a people demanding. Turn the ships around. We are a people awakening. We are a people reclaiming. We are a people demanding. Turn the ships around. Coal, oil, gas, none of these shall pass. Leave it in the ground and turn the ships around.
This is KBOO Portland.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right there.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, we feature a special extended report from Southern California with longtime radical immigrants' rights activist Juan Jose Gutierrez, continuing to keep us informed. Juan Jose speaks to us from Los Angeles, where federal forces of ICE, regular soldiers, and National Guard have started to patrol the streets and the parks, creating terror and undermining daily life. Also, we'll feature an update on the expanding killing fields of the Gaza Strip, where 2 million people are food insecure and starting to starve to death. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we continue to watch the militarization of U.S. streets with the extraordinary increases in the budget for national security for ICE, seeing the troops now out in the street. We're trying to keep a close eye on what's going on, what's really happening, and how people are going about resisting, among other things, among those who are keeping an eye on all of us, somebody's been watching for a long time. Joining Gavilana and myself is Juan Jose Gutierrez, longtime civil rights activist based in SoCal, a friend of the show, the community, and really keeping an eye out on the steps that we're taking towards, we have to say, Juan Jose, fascism. We're watching a dissipation of the power of the courts and the executive moving at will, including using troops. How does it feel to have the troops in L.A. now?
Dennis and Miguel El Gavilan Molina, thank you very much for inviting me. Well, here it feels like we have to move underground to protect ourselves because no one is safe here in L.A. As you mentioned, on July the 7th, there was a raid at MacArthur Park, one of the icon parks in the city of Los Angeles, where up to 90 members of the National Guard descended along with other members of the Marines and other federal agents to basically intimidate our community and proceed, you know, to really go after anyone that look Mexican. And so and that is a fact. As we speak, it was so awful that the mayor of the city of Los Angeles, Mayor Karen Bass, found herself forced to descend upon the park and basically try to negotiate with all these federal agents to leave the area because there were terrifying children who were there, you know, trying to have a good time at the park, and they had to be secluded onto a private area so that they wouldn't have to be terrified by these federal agents and members of the National Guard. I mean, it was really, really awful. That community descended on the park, you know, trying to figure out what exactly was that we could do, you know, to prevent these federal agents and members of the National Guard, you know, from occupying what is renowned, you know, across the country, but certainly in the city of L.A. as a public location where people come to enjoy themselves. I mean, this was really, really awful.
Juan Jose, please speak a little bit about the nature of the disruption that this is now causing, the levels of suffering, because we know that you're involved at many levels on the business community front, in the community front, human rights. Tell us about the multiple disruptions that are taking place in one of the most important cities in the country and the world.
Well, look, the situation is such that no one feels safe, so much so that the Attorney General of New York, Letitia Jones, united with a coalition of 18 other members of 18 other states' fiscal generals, you know, to support a demand, a lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union, you know, who are totally, you know, in disbelief, you know, that we would have members of the U.S. Armed Forces descend upon a public location in a public park, you know, to you know, to go after anyone and everyone that looks non-white, and so that's really what's going on right here, and no one feels safe, Dennis. I don't know what to say except to say that, you know, people came you know, on horseback and they went after us.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're speaking with Juan Jose Gutierrez. And also joining the discussion is our senior producer, Miguel Gavala Molina. Miguel, join us.
Absolutely, Dennis. And thank you, Juan Jose, for joining us today here on Flashpoints. You know, I have several concerns, but one of them is, you know, when you call out, you know, the National Guard, you federalize the California, you know, National Guard to federal authority. That's one thing. But when you bring in armed troops, this isn't militias. This aren't there to assist, to help, to offer aid, protection, security. These are combat troops. And in order to have them...
Capitan, let me say this. On Friday, July the 4th, American Independence Day, the 249th anniversary of our independence, nobody in L.A. was willing to go out there and pretend, you know, that we had independence. And so 25,000 people took to the streets in downtown L.A., preceded by another mass mobilization on June the 3rd. So the response of the Donald Trump fascist administration was to come on July the 7th, you know, with this mass raid with federal troops, the Army and the Navy and all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is unprecedented.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why I bring up this question. You know, in order to do that, to have all these, you know, armed forces, not just the Marines, you know, there has to be, according to, you know, the Constitution and rules and so forth, there has to be an insurrection, a rebellion. Well, that hasn't happened, with the exception of that one day where there was, you know, a few blocks and a couple of cars were burned.
People were marching,
he called that,
you know, but you know that's our constitutional right to do so. But there was no insurrection, and
no, there
and
wasn't.
Nonetheless, yeah.
Yeah, but nonetheless, it's happening. You know, he is still under that guise that there's an insurrection rebellion in L.A. Well, my concern is, where's the governor? You know, here we are. This is a domestic war. It's upsetting an entire population of workers. Regardless of what the administration in the White House are saying, this is an attack on workers and human rights. You know, because regardless of your legal status, you have certain constitutional rights. Well, here we are, you know, in this domestic war. The whole community up and down the state is you know, in fear, you know, with uncertainty. They've created chaos. And where's the governor? He's barbecuing somewhere in South Carolina, you know, enjoying himself and, you know, toasting and everything. I mean, really? There's a crisis in California, and this guy is already campaigning. What do you say to that, Juan Jose?
Well, look, I think that before we even talk about the governor, let's talk about the mayor. You know, the mayor found herself forced, Mayor Karen Bass, to come and confront all these federal agents, including members of the U.S. Armed Forces, to ask them, well, what are you doing? I mean, you know, I mean, these are children that you're coming and harassing in downtown L.A. I mean, you know, what is this all about? And then on the other hand, the most progressive sectors of the people in California, you know, they're saying that we cannot wait until, you know, 2 or 3 years from now before we can designate someone that we feel comfortable about, you know, running for president of the United States. And to my surprise, most of the people in California, certainly in Southern California, are saying, you know, that the governor, Gavin Newsom, would be the best representative, you know, to represent us in the next presidential election. So all hell's breaking loose in Southern California.
Exactly. And where is the governor? As I said, he's off campaigning.
Well, he went to South Carolina, and he's out there barbecuing. But nonetheless, I want you to know, Gavilan, that there are a lot of very, very influential people in Southern California that are saying that it's time, you know, that we nominate someone to be our next candidate for president of the United States. And to my surprise, you know, they're saying that it has to be Gavin Newsom. I don't know what you think about that, but in Southern California, they're saying that he's the most progressive candidate that we can position to run for president.
Well, let me just jump in here. If I can, Dennis here with Juan Jose and Miguel Gavilan Molina. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I want to, Mike, let's see if we have the mayor's statement that I believe we played on yesterday's show. I'd love to see if we can dig that up, Mike. And I want to drop that in again because it's very strong. And Juan Jose, we hear a politician, yes, acting on behalf of her people, standing up and really representing the truth about what's going on. And that was extraordinary. And I think Gavilan would like to see more of that kind of courage and honest courage a willingness of the governor to lock arms with the people, with millions of people in California now who are not, you have to admit, are not feeling safe. Our people are people going to work, Juan Jose. Our kids going to school. What's the terror at the local level? I mean, we need to hear a little bit more about that because Trump is really stirring up terror in communities that have now, you know, are hesitant about literally going to school.
Yes.
I mean...
Well, children are not going to school. Parents are preventing their children from going to school because they're afraid that if they send them to school, they could be arrested. People are not going to work because they believe that they could be the victims of an immigration raid. People are not going to churches. I mean, I was just talking to a Catholic priest who told me that on Sunday, which is when most people go to church, they were only getting as many as 50 people, when before they would have 2,000 or so people coming to the main churches in LA. As you know, most Mexicans are Catholic, and they're not going to church. I mean, they're afraid that if they go to church, they will be raided. And I mean, it's a huge mess throughout the city of L.A.
Let us stand by. Let's listen to the mayor of Los Angeles telling Trump and the U.S., I don't know what to call these forces, shock troops on the ground in public parks where kids are supposed to go have camp and have fun. But let's listen to the response of the mayor of Los Angeles to this kind of militarization of her city.
Today, I was on my way to the press conference with the governor talking about the six-month anniversary of the fires, of the natural disaster, the worst in California's recent history, and to report on the progress. While I was on the way, though, I got alerted that there was a ICE operation, military intervention, who knows, at MacArthur Park. I turned around, we went to the park, I could see a helicopter in the air, I think it was a Black Hawk helicopter, and I saw military tanks. It was the Custom and Border Patrol, and it might have been military on the periphery. To me, this is another example of the administration ratcheting up chaos by deploying what looked like a military operation in an American city. So I went to MacArthur Park because it is very important that the truth be told about what happened there. Now, you can spin it any way you like, but in my opinion, it's a political agenda of provoking fear and terror. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Frankly, it is outrageous and un-American that we have federal armed vehicles in our parks when nothing is going on in the parks. It's outrageous and un-American that the federal government seized our state's National Guard. It's outrageous and un-American that we have U.S. Marines who are trained to kill foreign soldiers overseas deployed in our American city. So here's the truth. There's no plan other than fear, chaos, and politics. Home Depot one day, a car wash the next, armed vehicles, and what looked like mounted military units in a park the next day. What happened to the criminals, the drug dealers, the violent individuals who were in the park today were children. It was their summer camp, their summer day camp. Those kids now have no activities this afternoon. They have to stay inside. They were ushered inside so that they didn't get exposed to the troops that were walking in formation across their playground area. We did not want the children to be aware that it was ICE. Although I do have to tell you that I went and I spoke to an 8-year-old. I never let on what was going on upstairs. But did this 8-year-old tell me that he was afraid of ICE? Did the 8-year-old tell me that he was afraid of ICE taking his parents and he didn't think it was good to take people away? So understand that that 8-year-old knows enough of what's going on that he's already traumatized in anticipation. And I don't know if he had a sixth sense or not to know that they were upstairs. But I think it's pretty dramatic that a child said to me that he was fearful of ICE.
The mayor of Los Angeles speaking out against the militarization of her city. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavilan Molina. We're honored to have Juan Jose Gutierrez. Juan Jose, is it time for a modern version of the Freedom Riders? Maybe the governor and other high officials want to devote a couple of hours on a day walking kids who are afraid to go to school into their classrooms. What about some kind of statewide outreach that shows that this is really an emergency and there and essentially democracy is at stake?
Well, democracy is at stake, Dennis and Miguel Gavilan Molina. You know, the situation over here is very explosive. People are arming themselves and they're saying, we're not going to, assume, they can just come and arrest us. So the situation is very, very explosive and growing by the day. When you go and you intimidate children as federal troops and army people did at MacArthur Park, I mean, the situation is just getting out of control. I don't know what to say. I mean, the people here, they're not going to take it.
Gavilan.
I hear that one will say, and people are preparing, and I think that's very important. But again, I think the listeners, our listener audience, needs to realize that the attack here is an attack against a workforce, undocumented workforce that contributes almost $100 billion in taxes. So they're not siphoning the system. They're not, living off the, food stamps and living off of social welfare. They're contributing. And yet they've been targeted, as an alleged race war. We know that Trump and his circle of reality stars passing off themselves as his administration, it's a reality show and they don't care. But one thing I do know is that the Catholic Church has been active. And I wondered if they're offering their maybe basements, maybe their facilities, to harbor people. ISIS grabbed people outside the churches, but not inside.
Miguel Gavilan Molina, the church has made statements, but that's as far as it goes. They made statements. But the people are demanding that they do more than just make statements.
Exactly.
They want action. They want the Catholic Church to really be out there with this new Pope, Leo XIV. If he's truly a follower of Pope Francis, they want him to be a little bit more radical. They want him to say, look, we're with you. You're our fellow members of the church, and we're going to be there to protect you. So far, it hasn't happened. I have to say that. I mean, so far, you know, the church has made some very powerful statements, but it hasn't taken any action to protect the people.
Well, maybe this is time, Juan Jose, to get community draft up a letter of all these incredible groups that are part of resistance and the pushback. And eventually, this new pope, who is from the United States, will make a tour of the country. Maybe you should reach out and say, well, hey, no, all these organizations are inviting you. So, yes.
Let me say something. To my surprise, members of the Center for Autonomous Social Action, CASA, Hermandad General de Trabajadores, had come to the fourth, and they said that they're not going to allow this thing to go on, you know, without a proper response. And they said that they're going to be in support of our community. Now, that's a very, very significant development. The members of the CASA Hermandad General de Trabajadores, meaning CASA General Brotherhood of Workers, are coming to the fourth. Now, these are individuals that belong to labor unions, the Teamsters, the machinists, and all these other unions, powerful unions. You know, they're saying, you know, enough is enough.
Well, it's going to take that union power, you know, to do this. And I'm glad to hear that, Juan Jose, because this is a worker struggle. Yeah, the administration has turned it into, you know, the enemy within, the illegal immigrants. But we're the immigrant community is a workforce. I believe 33% of the national workforce. And again, as I've said, they pay up to $100 billion and get nothing back except this cruelty and inhumane treatment by this administration. You know, with this soldiers, body snatchers, kidnappers, mercenaries, bounty hunters. It's chaos that's happening. But again, I'm glad to hear that labor...
Miguel, let me tell you this.
Yes.
The bounty hunters are in force in L.A., and people are sick and tired of them, and they're ready to confront them. There's going to be blood in this city if the bounty hunters don't stop doing what they're doing.
Well, yeah, I've heard that before, that, you know, blood will run in the streets. But people need to wake up and realize this is not just a, you know, immigrant refugee situation. They've come at it that way. But it's an attack on workers, and it's an attack on what remains of freedom. A lot of people didn't celebrate the 4th of July because, well, how can people celebrate when freedoms have been taken away? And democracy, you know, we have to reconstruct it. It's been literally destroyed and trampled on. So people need to realize, what we'll say, that this is not just a, you know, a brown thing, the brown masses. This is a human rights thing and workers' rights.
It's a human right.
And exactly. And I hope people listen that are out there. And realize that, you know, I'm so happy to hear that the labor unions are coming together, you know, because, you know,
the labor unions are coming together and they're supporting us because, you know, and they cannot believe that this kind of abuse is taking place in, you know, on the 21st century.
And just to, speaking of that abuse, and I need to ask you this question, Juan Jose. What was the message when the elected brown senator of California, this powerful state, more powerful than most every country in the world, they had the senator face down. What was the message? What was going through your mind? What was the message? And what do you think the impact of that was?
Well, Dennis, I'll tell you right now. I mean, people were outraged. I mean, the level of abuse, the way you know, in an undignified kind of way, you know, that they went after a U.S. senator, sent a message that no one that's brown skin and it's of Mexican origin could feel safe in the Golden State, is the most progressive state in the entire nation.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, we're speaking with Juan Jose Gutierrez, and we're talking about, I guess what we're talking about is how to respond Juan Jose Gutierrez, and where this goes from here. You certainly silence and sort of the Democrats, the general response of, you know, they're going to kill themselves. Yeah, they might, but we're going to go first in terms of what's going to happen here unless people get active and take a look at the big picture. And I hope that's what's happening. I want to give Gavilan the final word with you.
No, thank you, Dennis. And one of my concerns is, and I think you said it, Juan Jose, when you came on the show, and that's it. You know, people are, you know, going underground, you know, retreating back into
people
the shadows.
Are going underground because they don't feel safe no more.
Hello?
We lost him. I think we lost him, Mike. Let us let people what's that we did? I didn't catch that. Okay. Let's see if we can get him back for a few minutes. We'll take a musical break. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. Coming up later on in the broadcast, we'll be going back to review the situation on the ground in Gaza. Stay with us. You there, Juan Jose. Dennis here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. Miguel?
No, as I was saying, Juan Jose, you know, people are being forced to go underground, back in the shadows, and so forth. But what can people do to support the community, especially our listeners out there? Because this eventually, you know, if it isn't stopped this summer, you know, it's going to be military checkpoints at every perimeter of every city, of every town in California. And this government wants to militarize the complete country. And if we don't stop them here, it's going to eventually happen. So how can people help, Juan Jose, you know, to help in this resistance? You know, maybe people can help, you know, housing people, providing food, providing shelter. Because when people don't go to work, you know, how are they going to feed their families? How are they going to pay rents? So I think there needs to be a real effort to reach out. Are you part of any of that?
I am. But here's what I need to tell you. People here in L.A. are not afraid. People here are getting ready to go on the offensive. People here are not going to undertake this abuse by federal troops, including U.S. armed forces, you know, with a smile. People here are sick and tired of it. And that's what makes it very explosive and very dangerous, right? Now, on top of it, I have to do say that people here are going on the underground because, you know, nobody feels safe. And people are saying, well, look, you know, what can I do to protect myself and still be able, you know, to act, to protect democratic rights? You know, I mean, it's a very fluid situation. What we saw earlier about Mayor Karen Bass, I think it's a very good indication of what's happening. I mean, at the most basic level, you know, where people that are supposed to be protecting us are doing things, you know, they we would have thought were unheard of, right? I mean, you know, they're coming out and they're saying, look, we cannot allow this kind of stuff to go on. And I'm telling you, people are getting ready, you know, to confront, you know, the U.S. Armed forces, because, you know, they cannot believe that in a city like L.A., you know, the city of Latinos, right? I mean, the capital of Latinos, you know, that we can be confronting a situation like what we have right now. And so I don't know what to say. I mean, except that everything is so unpredictable.
It's a summer of rage. And, you know, we're covering this, and we're going to continue.
We thank you, Juan Jose, for your generosity and your time and a life's work. None of us really thought we would be here at this moment in history, but this is definitely a pivotal moment, and either we're going to have an expanded Trump operation, or people are going to stand up and say, we're not really interested in a new version of fascism. But that's what we're looking down the barrel of the gun of
but I gotta
loss
tell you
of
something, Dennis. The Mexican people are not going to put up with it.
I think you're right. I really do. And we want to talk to lots of them. We're interested in open up these microphones for people who are out there, who are standing up, who are concerned about this issue. And we're going to be in the streets a lot more, I'm sure. It's already started. Please keep us posted. And of course, stay safe. We'd love to speak with you again. All right. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Miguel, stay right there. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk a little bit more. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. Gavilan, it really is a problem. We're hearing it more and more that the Democrats really think their vision of activism. We've seen a little bit in terms of Congress, but generally speaking, is they've been so sure for so long that Trump is so stupid, so dumb, he's going to shoot himself in the foot, and we'll all come rushing in because we're a lot smarter. But the Democrats have not really offered anything to the people. How could somebody so extraordinarily unfit for the office of the President of the United States get elected unless the opposition party drops the ball? So I don't know, third party, fourth party, fifth party, something real has to change. And I am heartened, Gavilan, because in New York City with Mamdani there, there's actually a candidate, and the people are willing to step forward and throw their head into the ring for somebody who believes in human rights, a brown person who is sympathetic and standing against the genocide in the Middle East. So what do you think, Miguel?
Well, Dennis, you know, the Democratic Party's always depended on the Latino vote, especially in the last, I would say, you know, 40 to 50 years. to you know, win their elections. Without the Latino vote, they'd be losing. At this point, though, the Democratic Party has become the Demopublicans. I believe the majority of the Democrats, members of Congress, are millionaires. And in the Senate, the majority of Democrats are also multimillionaires. So at this point, Democrats built, you know, the detention, you know, concentration camps up and down the border. It was Obama. You know, he also, you know, lured young students, you know, to be part of a DACA program that he offered protection. But he didn't, you know, issue an executive order to give them permanent status when he had an opportunity to do so. You know, it was, you know, Bill Clinton who made that whole, you know, gatekeeper and forced people coming in, refugees coming in through the desert, you know, through Arizona, one of the hottest places in the country, if not the world. And that's called El Pasaje del Diablo, the devil's passage. So when we look at Democrats, they have not served, you know, the masses of Latinos, and in this case, Chicanos, like myself. I'm indigenous, but I'm also, you know, heritage of Mexican descent. But here we have the situation. The Democrats do not respond to us. You know, Gavin Newsom, you know, he gives few speeches. You know, Adam Schiff, they give great speeches. Nancy Pelosi, great speeches. But where's the action? You know, Adam Schiff should be out there confronting the Marines. You know, the elected, you know, officials here. You know, Alex Padilla tried to get into a news conference. Well, it's time for him to come out and join the masses in the street and confront, you know, the soldiers, confront the Marines. They're not doing, though. The Democrats spend time with their speeches. At this point, they have no substance, you know, because they have not been able to stop this president, you know, this dictator. And so where are we? Well, we're looking at, you know, as far as our view, from what I hear from folks, you know, amongst La Raza, you know, democracy's dead. We have to revive it. We're going to have to reconstruct this country. And I think people need to start thinking on that level and realize that brown hands that toil in the soil feed this state of California, made it into an agricultural empire, and the brown hands are at every level of food production, all the way to your table. You're sitting in a restaurant, you order, more than likely your waiter is going to be brown. You know, you go here, you go to the supermarket, your cashier, more than likely is going to be brown. So we're everywhere. We're not aliens, foreigners, you know, some kind of invading force. I mean, if you look at the Southwest, let's look at it. You know, L.A. was Los Angeles centuries before, you know, the formation of the first 13 colonies. You know, in Spanish is spoken, you know, there's what, 60 million, you know, Latinos in the United States. 43 million speak Spanish. And out of those, you know, the majority are citizens. So it's not some alien force. Yeah, they try to make it aliens, illegals, you know, this and that, trying to dehumanize and so forth. But people in California know. And for those that are not in the Latino reality, you know what's up. So this is where you reach out, you know, give a helping hand to, you know, the folks, to children, protect children. When they come into an area, say, I'm going to go out there and make sure these armed forces don't go into the playgrounds, don't go into parks, you know, don't go into churches, don't go into these places. You know, the community as a whole needs to come out, because as I've said, Dennis, you know, if we don't stop this right now, they've come at it as a race war. It's not. It's a war against workers and workers' rights. And as Juan Jose was telling us, labor's coming out in force because they know what's up. So again, you know, here in California, the population is what, 43%, you know, Latino brown mass of humanity. Well, it's time to make those connections. And like I say to our listeners, you know, we're part of your experience. You know, we're part of this fabric of what's California and the Southwest. You know, it was been through our sweat and labor that we made the Southwest into the economic power that it is, in particular here in California. So you enjoy your fine wines, you enjoy your fine cuisines, you know, the beautiful, lavish gardens and so forth. Well, you know, make the connection. We are part of this, you know, reality here in California. We are part of this dream of having a society open and free and liberty and justice for all. So I'm just saying, don't get sideswiped, because mainstream media barely touches upon it. They're in support of whatever policy's coming out, and they're just, you know, talking heads that, you know, raking the money while people are being attacked and there's a domestic war going on, and they don't even call it that. Why? As I've said, Dennis, and I've said it many times, this dictator wants to, you know, call and impose martial law and suspend elections forever. He said it. If you vote for me, you'll never have to vote again. How many times do people need to hear that? It's happening. It's not going to happen. It's happening. So again, Dennis, yeah, as I say to our listeners, let's not wait till the military checkpoints are in the perimeter of your cities or towns, because that's coming if we don't stop this.
And I say, am I correct, Gavilan, that we've got an in-community event coming up a week from today? Is that when we're going to be in San Francisco Broadcasting Live?
A week from today, it's going to be at Medicine for Nightmares. That's a kind of like a just one of the coolest bookstores in San Francisco in the Mission District. It's on 24th Street. And we will be doing a live show there 5 to 6 next Wednesday, a week from today, with this unbelievable author, writer, professor from the University of Phoenix, Nolan Cabrera. And he's the one that documented and wrote the book Banned. That's when that whole upheaval happened in Arizona. And
we were there reporting on it. We were right in the middle. Well, exactly. We're looking forward to that next week. I have to interrupt now because we're just against Absolutely. The clock. That is senior producer Flashpoints Miguel Gabriel Molina. Will be live. We're going to be taking this show on the road, lots of different places. Who knows? Maybe we'll be in your community really soon. You are listening to the show we're talking about is Flashpoints. It's KPFA Pacifica Radio. It's the People's Radio Network. KPFA has been on the air speaking truth to power since 1949. We are going to take a short musical break, and we're going to continue our dialogue with Jennifer Lowenstein, who's helping us keep track daily almost now about the genocide, the killing. Every day, the killing continues. Stay with us. We're not going to stop reporting on it. We're hoping that the reporting will make a difference. Stay with us. Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Happy to welcome back to these airwaves Jennifer Lowenstein, former Associate Director of Middle Eastern Studies and Senior Lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Jennifer, what would you like to tell us about your own background before we jump into this again? Tell us a little bit about where you've been and how you became engaged with Gaza, with occupied Palestine.
Let's see. Well, I wasn't prepared for my autobiography, but actually, it's a good question. I lived in Israel as a child, a young child. I was about 3 years old when my father was in the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra. And because of that, when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, I didn't really remember it. I was too young. But it was fascinating to me that we'd lived somewhere over the ocean. You know, that's how I thought when I was a kid. And I started to pursue it. I started to ask questions about why we lived there, what it was like, you know. And I became very interested in Israel and wanted to go and explore my own heritage, so to speak. But so when I was a junior in college, I went to Israel through Brandeis University, and I was there for about 7 months. It was a semester abroad. But I would say that within the first 2 days, my politics became what they are now. I saw what I considered unbearable inequalities. I saw a kind of apartheid regime. I couldn't have defined it that way in my head back then because we weren't talking about it. But I could easily see that there were two different classes of people then. There were the Israeli citizens and there were Arabs. And Arabs, whether they were citizens or not citizens, and when they were not citizens, they were called Palestinians. You know, things happened that were just too hard to not notice. What I always was very, what I find to be the most astonishing fact about modern Israel is that so many people go, and I should say probably pre-10/7, and they don't see it. And to me, that's a kind of willed blindness because it's literally in your face.
Yeah.
And in your backyard, you've got Gaza and the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and the inequality and the second, third, fourth class citizenship rating that these people have is glaring. And
Let me jump in here. Yeah. Let me jump in here because we've got about 10 minutes now. What I'd like you to do, you know. The way in which Trump works, you repeat the lie enough, it becomes a truth, it becomes a truism in the society. I believe in repeating the truth enough so that people have to memorize it and we can counteract the big lie. So I'd like you to sum it up again. Where are we in terms of Gaza and the West Bank, the occupation? Take a few minutes and remind people. And I don't mind if you repeat some of the horrific details that continue to take the lives of tens and dozens and hundreds of Palestinians.
Yeah, well, I mean, the situation is not improving. It gets worse by the day. Today, there were 74 people killed. That's since dawn, but since midnight, it's been 105. So again, we're talking about approximately 100 people per day being killed in Gaza. And I want to remind people that in a two-week, that's like 1,000 people every two, it's more than 1,000 people every 2 weeks. That's the kind of killing rate. Today was especially horrible. First of all, there was a strange new weapon seen in the sky, sort of a white glowing ring that had looked almost like steam or smoke coming out of it. And I thought it was a form of white phosphorus, but I'm told that it is not. It's something else. So nobody knows what that is, but it's coming down on the people of Gaza. Israel struck over 100 targets last night in the Gaza Strip. And my first question was, what is left to strike? I mean, they're bombed buildings, but that gives you a sense of how intensive the bombing is. And I would say that seeing some of the video clips on Twitter and elsewhere was extremely disturbing because in one, there's a man holding up a beheaded fetus, literally ripped from the womb of its mother, both killed in a tent strike near Khan Yunis. Like 10 people in a tent were incinerated as part of the 74 dead since dawn. And then shortly after that, there was another picture of a 3.5-year-old child without its head. also having been massacred in the Gaza Strip. These are the kinds of pictures that nobody will show you on mainstream news because they're horrific. And there's a part of me that wouldn't want to show those kinds of pictures on television. But at this point, I think people need to see what's happening, because in another area where there was a strike somewhere near Mawasi as well, adults were literally laying out the bodies of young children killed in that strike. And it brought to my mind the Spanish city of Guernica in the Spanish Civil War, where you see dead children being laid out on the sidewalk. Those are the kinds of thoughts that I have. So the brutality of what's happening in Gaza has not lessened in the least, with Trump and Netanyahu going on in Washington, D.C., talking about a truce. They're no closer to a truce or a ceasefire today than they were yesterday. Israel is not going to redeploy out of Rafah and the Morag Corridor. It wants to establish a huge concentration camp there from which they will, quote-unquote, encourage people to leave, quote-unquote, voluntarily. And as I said yesterday, there are three choices for Gazans right now or when the bombing stops. One is to leave. Two is to languish in a wasteland for God knows indefinitely how long. And three is to die. So when you hear Trump and Netanyahu talking about wanting to give Gazans a choice, which I find literally an obscene thing to say, that's really what they're talking about. Suddenly Netanyahu cares about the Palestinians of Gaza having a better future, so he's giving them the choice of leaving. This is how it's couched. It's really disgusting. As this is happening, there have been power outages across the strip in hospitals. So now Shifa Hospital, what used to be the main hospital in the Gaza Strip, has closed something like five or six of its wards because there's no fuel to run them. So, you know, if you need electricity to stay alive, if you need a breathing machine, if you need oxygen, if you need anything that requires a machine, you're out of luck. And your listeners will remember that there's already no baby formula getting into Gaza, and that's becoming critical. Malnutrition is high. And at the United Nations today, there was a report handed around about the coming collapse of UNRWA. That's the United Nations Relief Works Agency, the agency that was set up in 1949 specifically for Palestinian refugees that Israel and the United States are sidelining by using the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. That's all extremely disturbing stuff. The last two things that I think are worth reporting on is that the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Israel and the Occupied Territories, that would be Francesca Albanese, she today was sanctioned by the United States. Something that anyone who knows anything about her work would call despicable. She has consistently told the truth about what's happening. She has galvanized people to act against a genocide, which she named very early on. She's not allowed to come into this country. Her assets could very well now be frozen. She basically responded by calling it the behavior of a mafia to threaten her that way, to sanction her. The other thing that I think is newsworthy that I've been talking about but I still don't see reported on the news is that Israel launched a ground invasion into South Lebanon this morning. And it did get covered by the New York Times. I didn't see an article on it until late this afternoon. It obviously wasn't a large incursion, because I think if it had been, it would have gotten more news. But I think it's very important, because the Lebanon front is heating up as Syria and Israel inch towards talks and possible membership for Syria in the Abraham Accords. That's what the U.S. government wants. Pressure is now being put on Lebanon to force Hezbollah to disarm Hezbollah is not going to disarm. It's simply, it's that simple. They okay. They have no intention of it. So I think we're going to be seeing, we're going to see something happening there soon.
Thank you for that. Thank you for reporting, all your reporting, and all the time you spent helping us understand better what's going on the ground as it continues. We appreciate always the contributions that you make for us, Jennifer Lowenstein. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And just this final note, for today's show, the June 26th billboard for Flashpoints reported there were arrests during a protest at Palantir Corporation in Palo Alto. The arrests actually happened at the security company's New York offices. We apologize to the fair city of Palo Alto and the police department there for the mistake. There were no arrests in Palo Alto during the nationwide protest against Palantir. And that's it for us.
And that does it for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Our theme music is written and produced by Charlie Lang. For questions, comments, email Dennis Bernstein at dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.